Hello and welcome everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo and we are here for our immune system module. I think it's really, really important to understand how the immune system works. So rather than just say, well, if somebody has an immune system problem, you know, autoimmunity, etc., here's what you do. I don't think that's serving you. I think you need to be understanding how the immune system works. So I'm spending a lot of time giving you that. And the reason for that is that will help you when you're looking up, well, what's going to work for this person? Or I put this person on echinacea or some other things that are supposed to be good for the immune system, and it didn't work, and you start searching, you're going to be able to understand some of the literature. The immune system is very complex. And just like everything else I'm teaching you, you could do a whole 3-credit college course, which means, 3 hours a week for 12 weeks, 36 hours, you know, that's a lot of time that we would be spending on one particular subject. And that's what happens. And, you know, if you're in immunology, obviously, there's a lot more than that. And I'm giving you resources that you can study on your own. So when you have people come in with immune system problems, and you will, because so many people have them, we're going to talk about how you can get control. And we're also going to be tying in the immune system, then followed by the detoxification, and go into a little bit more detail on some of the methylation pathways and all that, and the genetic kind of involvements as well. So just really excited to talk to you about the immune system, because like I said, this is where so many people are having problems. We see there's an abundance of autoimmune disease. There's a lot of infectious disease. Allergies are through the roof. So you're going to see a lot of people. I mean, chances are the first few people that you start to see are going to have some sort of problem with their immune system. So you need to understand how it works so that you can explain to them. Everything I'm telling you is for your information only. It is not to be construed as medical advice or the replacement for care of a qualified healthcare professional, and if you have any problems that are qualified as medical problems, make sure that you make all changes under the care of a qualified healthcare professional. So I've broken the process up into three parts: how the immune system works, what are the things that can go wrong, and what you can do to correct it. So it's three logical parts that would make sense whenever we're trying to fix any system, pretty much. I try to go along those lines so that we do it in a logical order. The immune system's job, as we know, is to protect us from foreign invaders. They're called antigens, and we consider the immune system to be the police department and the army. They're out there looking for trouble, and if they find trouble, they're deflecting the trouble away so that it doesn't cause damage in your body. So things like bacteria, viruses, funguses, yeast molds, food particles, dirt, parasites, and environmental toxins are all under the realm of good old immune system. What do you know? So let's look at how it also protects us against free radical damage. Oxidative stress is a term you're going to hear a lot. Your clients may have heard that because it's in the news a lot. Oh, avoid oxidative stress, free radical damage. So you need to understand how it works. What really is oxidative damage, and what role your immune system plays in protecting you from it. So oxidation is a process that's actually, for the most part, it's caused by the exposure to oxygen. So if you cut an apple in half, you leave it on the counter, the oxygen, the air, it causes the surface to go brown. And it's an actual chemical reaction called the redox reaction. Oxidation, reduction. Okay? When you buy something like vitamin C, which is an antioxidant, you want to get a fully reduced vitamin C. Because reduction is the opposite of oxidation. If the vitamin C is already partially oxidized, it's not going to work as a very good antioxidant. And quite frankly, a lot of the products out there are not fully reduced. They haven't been done in a vacuum in such a way to prevent the air from getting in and causing vitamin C to just do its job. So oxidation is considered like the rusting of the cells, like the apple turning brown. If you leave iron out in the elements, it turns brown, it rusts, and that happens inside your cells. So what forms are free radicals? And free radicals are just unstable molecules. They're looking to become stable. They have the extra electron, they're looking to get rid of that extra electron or take on an extra electron, boom, so that they can be stable again. And what they do is they go around and they scavenge throughout your body. to try to become stable. And what they do is leave something unstable in its wake and unstable in its wake and unstable in its wake. So antioxidants get in there and quench the free radicals. They provide them. They basically are, they sacrifice themselves. If you think about it, they're really like martyrs. They sacrifice themselves for the good of the organism. They sacrifice themselves so that they can stabilize the free radicals, prevent the oxidative damage that happens to the cells in the presence of free radicals. And that's why antioxidants are so important. So once you have free radicals, of course, then you have more oxidation because they're going to go around and scavenge and try to, so you have more rusted cells. The oxidation actually can cause damage to your DNA, right? Remember, the DNA is the blueprint. It tells the cell how to reproduce, what proteins to reproduce, and what it should look like. The DNA is made up of these long chromosomes, and each of the chromosomes has lots of little parts to it. And when you've got oxidation and free radical damage going on, it's actually cutting, snipping, adding to, deleting from the DNA so that the DNA can't adequately reproduce that cell. When it reproduces it, that cell may not be working properly. Maybe it doesn't exchange the nutrients and the wastes properly, or maybe it becomes a cancer cell and then starts to reproduce itself out of control because the DNA in the cell itself is damaged. It can damage your cell membrane. The cell membranes, there's the lipid bilayers, and you need to have good fatty acids in there. And one of the things that are oxidative chemicals are unstable fats, right? Oxidized fats. So when oxidized fats make their way into your cell membrane, it causes damage. It doesn't work properly. Oxidized cholesterol is another problem. Where everybody's this big hullabaloo, cholesterol's the bad guy, cholesterol's the bad guy. And actually, cholesterol is the precursor to all your steroid hormones. Cholesterol is an antioxidant. Cholesterol, as it's produced in your body, is not bad. It's when it gets oxidized that it causes all the damage to the blood vessel linings, that it causes the predisposition to plaques and to heart disease. And free radical damage is a part of that. It causes stiffening of the arteries as a result of damage to those arterial walls. It causes wrinkles. So if we haven't gotten you so far with the stiff arteries and risk of heart disease, let's go to the vanity. Who wants wrinkles, right? It causes damage to the cell structure, the collagen in the cell, in the skin cells, and causes wrinkles. And it can cause brain damage. So if, you know, you're not worried about your heart, certainly wrinkles in your brain should do it. And this is how you can talk to people, you know, about this. When you eat that fat, when you eat that oxidized fat, it's causing damage to your immune system. It's causing damage to your cells. You can get wrinkles. It's going to cause brain damage. We need to get rid of those and replace them and do an oil change. So I have this little oxidative stress assessment. It's kind of a combination of one that Mark Hyman has in his brain. I forget what his book is called, but he has a series of books, very good books. He's functional medicine MD, and he has an oxidative stress assessment. So I played around with that. I basically took that and modified it with some extra questions and took out ones that I didn't think were important for, or tried to fit it on one page anyway. But this is a stress assessment that you can do with your clients when they come in to see what is the level of immune system compromise, how is their oxidative stress, and then you can score it. And then you can tell them, you know, look, you've got to take action now. This is a real good thing maybe even to do at the beginning of your relationship with somebody to get them really on board. Well, look what's happening. Maybe your problems are minor and you're thinking, oh, I don't want to spend the money to get it fixed right now, but this is serious. You've got some high risk here. And you're heading down that path, and it's best to head it off at the pass now. So let's start off by talking about your immune system and the various components of your immune system. We have the barriers, and we have the chemical pieces, the parts that do various things to the body, chemistry to protect you. So let's start by talking about the barriers. Obviously, the skin is a barrier. The skin is a segue into the body, but it has within it part of the immune system, okay? It's got dendritic cells and things that can actually actively capture, we'll talk more about what those are in a bit, actively capture toxins and bacteria and stuff and not let it go right into the bloodstream. So you have within your skin, you have part of your immune system. Your intestinal lining is lined with the gall. It's basically the lymphatic system that lines the digestive tract. And secretory IgA is big in there. You've got your lungs. The lungs are a barrier for your blood. It filters out things, so it doesn't allow things to go into your blood. And then, of course, the blood-brain barrier. And that's where there's a selective membrane between your bloodstream and your brain that doesn't allow larger molecules to go through, which is supposed to keep out toxins from getting into the brain. And compromise to any of these, like the intestine, that the microvilli, you can get leaky gut and the intestinal membrane is compromised. The skin, you can get compromised if you have an open wound and you don't protect that open wound, that allows things to get into your system that shouldn't. Okay? So, but then we also have a lot of other pieces to the immune system. There are hormones, actually, and hormones and cytokines are kind of hormone-like things in the immune system. Antibodies. We've got white blood cells. We've got your bone marrow, your spleen, your lymphatics, your complement system, and your thymus. And we'll be talking about each of these and what they do and how they do it and how you can support them. But I'm going to go through each of the pieces of the immune system and share with you what they are and how they work. So the first is the leukocytes, which are your white blood cells. And you've got multiple types of white blood cells. When you do a blood cell count, a CBC, complete blood count, on a lab, you always want to ask for a differential. A differential, not just the total white blood cells, because that doesn't tell you a whole lot. But when you get the differential, it tells you how much of each of these on our screen on slide 9 are on there. We'll go through each of those. How much of each of those you have, and you can get a clue as to what might be going on in the immune system if things are amiss. So the first three, neutrophils, eosinophils, and basophils, are collectively known as polymorphonuclear granulocytes, and they're formed in your bone marrow. The neutrophils are the first line of defense. They have a very short half-life, only 2 to 3 days. And when you see them elevated on a CBC, it could be that you have an acute bacterial infection. Okay? They should be in the range of 40% to 60%, so it's by far the largest by volume of the white blood cells. The eosinophils are the ones that deal with parasites and allergies. They're about between 0 and 3%. Zero is ideal, right? You don't want to be dealing with parasites and allergies. And if you have any number, if you have a 1 or 2 or 3, that's considered normal range, but it still means there might be some low level of allergy or parasite going on. Above 3, you're for sure in the range of, it's something you really need to deal with. Personally, I think that any number there is something you want to pay attention to, maybe not go on an active parasite program, but to actually do whatever you can to protect yourself. Basophils are related to histamines, and they're in the mast cell membranes. The basophils lie, and they are related to allergy, sometimes parasites as well. Okay, they're related to the mast cells, IgE antibodies, which the antibodies that get evoked on an immediate hypersensitivity reaction. Somebody eats shellfish, they get hives. Basophils, mast cells, are all histamines are coming into play right there. Okay. So those are usually very short-lived. They come up, they come down. But if they're chronically elevated and they show on a CBC as more than 1%, then there's something actively going on that's related to histamine production, so either allergy or parasite. Monocytes. So those are the polymorphonuclear granulocytes, and they're called that because they have the shape of their nucleus. It's a multi-lobed nucleus. And they also have these little granules in the cytoplasm of the cell. And you see that when you do stains. Monocytes are a second line of defense. They're usually elevated in the recovery stage of an illness. And monocytes are the direct precursors to macrophages. Monocytes in the blood do nothing. It's when they get to the tissue, they cross in, they turn into macrophages, which are the gobble up the goodies, gobble up the bad guys' cells, macrophages. So they are a second line of defense, meaning that if they are elevated, you're probably in the recovery stages. They're formed in the bone marrow. So then we have the two separate kinds that are called the lymphocytes and the plasma cells. And these are formed in your lymph tissue, not in your bone marrow. And they're part of what's called the adaptive immune system. The adaptive immune system meaning that it adapts to the exposures that you have. it creates memory of the exposures that you have. So the lymphocytes make antibodies. And on a CBC, if it's elevated, it could be that you're suffering from a chronic or acute viral infection. And we go acute versus chronic by the number, total number of white blood cells. When your white blood cells are high, higher than the normal range, which is the ideal range, which is like 5 to 10, when your white blood cells are elevated above 10, then it's usually an acute infection. Or if it's extremely elevated, it could be something like leukemia. If the white blood cell levels are low, it's usually a chronic problem. And they get low because your body gets exhausted, resources get exhausted fighting this thing off, and they end up being low. They're often low in autoimmune disease. They're sometimes low in like a chronic, like a post-mono kind of situation where you've got Epstein-Barr virus going on, chronic hepatitis, or just a chronic gut infection can cause the total white blood cells to be low. And then finally, we have the plasma cells, and those actually produce antibodies from B cells. Those are where you get the memory. And we'll look at the whole entire process and how this works so you understand. So let's look at how our blood cells are formed. And this also provides you a little picture of what they look like. Just take a look here quickly at where it says granulocytes, eosinophil, basophil, and neutrophils. You see there the way their nucleuses look? They have like, it's a nucleus with this little long stretchy thing and then another one. And then the neutrophil has here, there's four of them. And you see the little granules in there? They're polymorphonuclear granulocytes. If you look at some of the others, they just have a single cell nucleus in there. So we start with what's called a stem cell, starts out in the bone marrow. We go to a myeloid stem cell, and that differentiates into either red blood cells or platelets or the granulocytes. The myeloblast then turns into one of the three granulocytes. Okay, so that's the way that they go. They have the same origin, the red blood cells, platelets, and the granulocytes. Okay? But then on the other side, you've got the lymphoid stem cell. It turns into a lymphoblast, which is an immature lymph cell. And that differentiates into B lymphocytes, T lymphocytes, and natural killer cells. So we'll talk more about what those all are. In addition to the white blood cells being part of your immune system, an important part are hormones and hormone-like chemicals. Cytokines are inflammatory hormone-like chemicals, and they're produced by the immune system. Hormone-like meaning they go and they travel around and they get their messages. They take the message from one part to the other. They go around. The lymphokines are actually cytokines that are produced by the lymphocytes. And when we look at some of the T helper and the T suppressors and we look at how the autoimmune reactions happen, we'll talk a little bit more about lymphokines. Thymusin is produced by the thymus, and that encourages you to produce more lymphocytes. Your thymus is sitting right there in your chest in the middle, and in people who have leukemia, here's something to look for, is if somebody starts to say, I have this pain on my sternum, when I touch it, it's really sore, it's really painful. That you want to make sure they get that checked out, because that can be an early sign of leukemia. I have a story to tell you. When I was in chiropractic school, one of my friends who actually, she was going through the nutrition certification program or nutrition master's degree program with me, so we were doing both programs. She suddenly started having these weird symptoms nobody could explain, and she started saying to me, I have this weird pain right here on my breastbone. And I just recalled, oh my God, we're sitting in class. And I thought, oh my God, she might have leukemia. And I didn't want to say it. What to do? Should I say anything to her? She was going to go to the doctor. She was going to get something checked out. And I, you know, I was at a loss for whether I should say anything, scare her or whatever. Well, she turned out she had leukemia. So trust your intuition about stuff. I had that happen one other time. It was at my mother's funeral, and our friends of my parents that used to live next door to them and had moved away were there. And he was telling me how he was having all these headaches, and they were really low-grade headaches, and I started asking him some questions, and I went, oh my God, this guy, I think he has a brain tumor. You know, it just came to me, and but based on the symptoms, but maybe it was just a feeling as well. And the doctor said, oh, you know, I don't know what it is, no problem. I went to his wife, and I said, look, I said, I just want him to make sure he gets checked out, because these signs are what exhibits in people with a brain tumor. And I just want to make sure, just go to the doctor and say, look, you know, do a brain scan, do an MRI, you know, check me out. The guy had a brain tumor, and he died about a year later. So trust those things that come, when It may be that your brain is going towards, your intuition is using some of the things that you know that are tucked away in the far recesses about how to differentiate different kinds of conditions and diseases. Trust that, right? So if you have somebody that's complaining about chest pain, and it's right there on the middle on the sternum, and it doesn't get aggravated by movement or rest, then have them get a blood count and just see what their blood cells are doing. And if they're really wonky, then you may have to send them out for bone marrow. So what else? So interleukins. You'll see things called IL-1, IL-2, IL-16. Those are interleukins. And they are part of the protective effect of the immune system. They're an inflammatory chemical that happens when you have fever. It happens as a result of antibodies. So you see that in autoimmune disease. And when the B cells get activated, the memory cells. And then finally, actually, steroids and corticosteroids can have an effect on the immune system, particularly the adrenals, and the cortisol can suppress the immune system. So those are the pieces, the parts of your immune system. And here's what I want you to get at this. You don't need to memorize everything. I want you to have an overall understanding of how it works, right? Because you don't have to remember that this little cell and the pseudopodia and all these things. I gave you a cute little picture. But it's really understanding of what is going on there. There's a lot of little details that they make you study in school that you never need unless you're going to be a microbiologist and you're going to sit there and look at things on a regular basis or you're doing research. You need to have the overall understanding and the kind of a picture in your brain, which is why I put a lot of pictures in, of how your immune system works. So macrophages, you can consider these to be like the Pac-Man of your immune system. They go around and they gobble up invaders. They're made from monocytes, and they can be either mobile, moving around, or attached. So they can be in particular organs. And there are specific names for the ones like the Kupffer cells in the liver, for example. And I'm going to give you a list, but again, just knowing that they're there, recognizing the names of those, and having a working knowledge of that. I'll tell you a funny story about macrophages. When my son was little, he was probably 2 years old, we'd talk about, you know, what happened, and we just always talked, they always ask great questions, so some way, I don't remember how, we had talked about macrophages. You know, when people are sick, and they're white blood cells, and they go around, they're like, they'll gobble up the bacteria. And that was, I don't even remember when we had that conversation. So he was almost three. He's about a month shy of his, maybe 2 months shy of his third birthday. And we had gone to Hawaii, and we went there sooner. I was going for a conference and a combined vacation, and my husband was meeting me there a week later, so I went there with Eric. And we were just hanging out and having a great time. And my husband comes along, and he's like, oh my God, I have this cold, I have this cough, he has, you know, all this stuff going on. And my son goes up to him and says, Daddy, you need more macrophages. And my husband like looked at this little tiny kid saying this big word, and he goes, Eric, I have no idea what those are. He goes, Daddy, they're part of your immune system that gobble up the bacteria. You need to make more macrophages. So that story sticks in my brain, you know, and how you can explain to people. And when you explain to people on a level that they get, even a two-year-old can understand how the immune system works. And when people are wanting to understand things and they're having trouble following through because you just say do this or do that, when you give them an understanding of how it works, they tend to do it. And of course my little, and if I said, and I think I might have, the conversation might have been, and you know, when you eat sugar, people eat sugar, it kills their macrophages, and why would they want to do that? Might have come up in conversation when we were talking about sugar and why it was bad. This kid to this day will not touch sugar. He hates sugar. And it sticks in his brain. Sugar kills my macrophages. I don't want to do that. So they attack or destroy by a process called phagocytosis. Take a look at the little pictures. At the top is your monocyte. The monocyte is an immature macrophage. And look at it. It's got a lysosome, which is the place where there are chemicals that can kill things off. They produce toxic chemicals to kill off invaders. It's got the nucleus, and it's got what's called a phagosome. Okay? And a phagosome is the process by which the macrophages work is something called phagocytosis. And it basically takes that membrane and it engulfs and then brings it in and makes a little pack around it. So it's a little storage container for it, and that's what a phagosome is. Okay, but the immature one, look, if they don't have the little tails on them, the little pseudopodia, that on the mature ones, so they can't really engulf. They have all the material inside so that they could kill off bacteria. They're not developed. They don't have the little pods. And so when they developed into the mature and they have all the cell machinery, then they can move around those little pseudopodia. It's like little flagella on a paramecium, or like a tail on a fish, which helps them to swim around. And then they see something that's not good and they engulf it. And what we're going to see is that they can kill some of it, but a lot of times what they do is they will act as antigen presenting cells. So instead of just killing it off, it will take it and present it to the immune system and say, here, memorize this guy, because if he ever comes back, I want to get him more quickly. It's a really cool process. What they're attracted to are areas of inflammation, areas that have toxins in them, degenerated tissue where it's been broken down, and also cytokines. So they are attracted there by a process called chemostasis. And so there's a signal that goes out and they just rush to the area and do their thing and then use their chemicals to destroy things, but also act as presenting cells to take them to the immune system. And we'll show you a nice diagram of how that works. So I'd like you to look at, this is just another visualization of the other picture. I just thought it was cute because it had the bone, right? The stem cells come from the bone, from the marrow. And then you've got the two sides, the red blood cells, the platelets, and then the monocytes and the granulocytes. Okay? And this one I put in because it does show the monocytes. Although they're not polynuclear granular cytes, they are still produced from the same precursors, the myeloblast, as the polymorphs, the basophils, eosinophils, and neutrophils. So let's talk about antigens. We use that word, we throw it around. I just want to make sure it's really clear. An antigen is basically a foreign protein or something your body perceives as a foreign protein. It's something your body perceives as an attacker, as something dangerous. And an immunogen is one that actually triggers the problem. So the antigen will trigger the immune system to take a look. The immunogen actually triggers it to happen. Haptens don't actually trigger a chemical attack. It just is there. It alerts the immune system, and the immune system says, oh, this is okay. This is okay. All right? So let's talk more about antibodies. We talk about antibodies and antigens and the antibody-antigen complexes. Antibodies are often called immunoglobulins. And that's where they are part of the white blood cell system, right? IgM, immunoglobulin, M, D, G, A, and E are the main ones. The yellow is the static part of the antibody. That's there no matter what they're fighting off, that's there. The blue part is the part that changes and shifts. It's a shapeshifter that allows for the recognition of particular antigens. And they're different shaped antibodies. So that if you've got an antibody that was formed as a result of streptococcus infection, and you've got a fungus, that streptococcus antibody is not going to recognize that fungus and just leaves it alone. So you need to have a specific antibody that's shaped to match and grab onto that fungus. So there's different kinds of antibodies. The first line defense are the IgMs and IgDs. They're the first ones to come to the rescue. IgG is the most prevalent, and IgG is the one that's most associated with delayed onset sensitivities, like food sensitivities, as well as for even bacterial and other kinds of invaders. IgA lines all the mucosal surfaces, so it's in your sinuses, it's in your lungs, it lines your GI tract, all of that, and it's the protection right there on the mucosa. Whoops, we see something, get rid of it before it even gets into the blood. IgG, IgM, and IgD are in the blood, whereas IgA is in the mucosal surfaces. So the IgA is like, whoa, we're going to get there. So when I say IgM and D are the first line, it's the first line once it gets into the bloodstream. But IgA, while you'll have IgAs circulating in the bloodstream, the main place that they are going to be is that in that mucous membrane, because they're going to just keep things from getting into the bloodstream. And then IgEs are mainly in mucus secretions, and they provide a histamine, a very strong histamine reaction. So whenever somebody has an immediate sensitivity reaction, so they eat strawberries, they get hives. They eat shellfish, they get hives. They, you know, do something and their throat closes. I had once had a little boy here visiting with my son and a friend of my son's, and I fed them. I made them this really nice macadamia nut chocolate candy stuff, and all the kids loved it. And this one boy went, "I don't know what's happening, but I feel like I can't breathe very well. I feel like my chest is, I feel like I'm getting a rash." And I looked at him. It turns out his mom, he never knew he had this allergy. His mom has a severe allergy to macadamia nuts. And he'd never had a macadamia nut because mom had never bought them. They're not like a common thing that you'd get at school, right? So he'd never had a macadamia nut before. And he was having a severe IgE-mediated allergic reaction. Throat closing, face all red, itching all over his body. They were in the hot tub at the time. I dragged him out of the hot tub. I threw him in a bath. I threw all kinds of herbs. I dosed him with vitamin C. I gave him some various things. And we fortunately got that allergic reaction down and didn't have to bring him to the ER, because that's a serious, it's an anaphylactic reaction, okay? So IgEs are responsible for that sort of reaction. Whereas IgG, if you have a food allergy that's a delayed sensitivity food allergy, it may be you eat the food and it isn't for a few hours or even a day later that you start to feel depressed or lightheaded. And the symptoms are usually different. It's usually not a skin response. It's not a histamine response. A histamine, we'll see in a bit, or is in the cell membranes, and it's produces an immediate inflammatory response, mast cells, and just like chemotaxin, kill that off. So that's antibodies and immunoglobulin. We also have this thing in our system called the reticular endothelial system, which are basically a fancy way of saying mobile and fixed macrophages. So the parts of the reticular endothelial system, it's a jumble of a word, is in the liver, and those are called Kupffer cells. And in the lymph nodes in the spleen and the bone, the microglia in the brain, those are cells in the brain that are part of your immune system that have these macrophages ready and raring to grab anybody that comes along. Alveolar in the lungs. Histiocytes in skin, the subcutaneous layer of the skin. Okay? And then type A lining, it's called, in the synovium, that's the synovial fluid in your joints. And then the osteoclasts in the bone, and it's interesting, we don't generally think about osteoclasts as part of the immune system. We think of osteoblasts, they build bone, osteoclasts, they break it down. And what happens is they're actually breaking it down because it's part of the immune system. It's breaking it down so you can make new bone. So, interesting. So let's look at the types of immunity. We have your immune system. Your immune system has either one of two parts. It's innate or adaptive. The innate immune system are those things that you're born with, that are there, it's there no matter what. It's there as a general defense of whatever comes in. So it's your barriers, like your skin and your digestive lining and all the others we talked about. Lysozyme, which is an enzyme in your tears, saliva, and blood that just kills on contact anything that's foreign. Your stomach acid, the pH of 2 in your stomach, is really valuable for killing off microbes that may come in with your food. And then phagocytes, which are the macrophages and neutrophils, right? They're there. They're not specific. They don't have a memory. They just go, oh, that looks foreign, grab it. That looks foreign, grab it. It just engulf, right? Complement, which are blood proteins that create inflammation, and cytokines, which are those hormone-like chemicals that travel around and they spew out chemicals. They create inflammation. And natural killer cells. So that's all part of your innate immune system. It's just no matter what, it's always there. But it's kind of slow to ramp up. So what the creator of our bodies, the designer of this system, decided was we needed something so that we could remember when we get re-exposed to something, so that we don't have to go through all that inflammation and all that crazy stuff. We just remember it, we get it, we take it out, we're done. So we have both the cell-mediated and the humoral. So the cell-mediated is activated T lymphocytes. So those are like, whoa, they don't really have a, there's not an antibody antigen. It's just T lymphocytes that are basically set up to kill, but they recognize things. And then humoral, antibodies produced by B lymphocytes. And B are the, like the memory lymphocytes, okay? So let's look at the types of lymphocytes. You see, I'm just building this up for you. I'm building it up so you have an understanding of how the immune system works. So when we talk about what can go wrong and how you can help people to correct it, you'll have a basic understanding. And then when you go do some searches and you start to research some of this, these words are not going to be completely unfamiliar and you have to start from scratch. So the types of lymphocytes are either T cells or B cells. T cells are made in the thymus, hence they're called T cells, and they're cell-mediated immunity. Remember we talked about those two types of acquired or adaptive. Sometimes it's called acquired immunity, usually adaptive. And then the B cells are made in the bone marrow, thus the word B cells from the bone marrow, and that's your humoral immunity. So mature plasma cells that produce antibodies. And we talk about lymphocytes and plasma cells, and those are produced by the lymph. Yes. So where are the lymphocytes located? Well, lymph nodes, right? We have lymph nodes all over our bodies. And we know that the lymph is actively fighting something off if those lymph nodes get swollen. I remember one time we were in Hawaii on a vacation when my son was 3 at the time. My younger son was 3. And he went to bed. Everybody was fine. He woke up in the middle of the night. He couldn't sleep. He was tossing and turning. And then he said, my ears hurt. So I start to examine him. And his neck, his lymph nodes in his neck are majorly big, huge, and swollen. And you're like, okay, we're on vacation. We're supposed to get up tomorrow and go on a snorkeling trip. What am I going to do? Fortunately, I traveled all the time with my kids with my first aid kit. So I had all kinds of immune system stuff. I had homeopathics. I had echinacea, vitamin C, golden seal. I had a whole bunch of stuff, and I just decided what I was going to give him. And then I have these particular points that are acupressure points that you can do with an ear infection. Like, he has an ear infection. What am I going to do? And finally, he fell asleep after about half an hour of working on him. And the next morning he woke up, he was perfectly fine. The lymph had gone down. It was really built up because it was fighting something. It gave him enough oomph to fall back to sleep and fight it off, and it was completely gone. Thus is the power of your immune system. Thus is the power of your natural medicine. So the lymph nodes, the spleen, your gut, the thymus, and the bone marrow. So let's talk about dendritic cells. I really love this picture. You see this cell with these long projectile arms and finger-like projections off of it. And that's the pink thing in the middle. And then you see that little yellow gunk right around it. That yellow gunk is the bacteria, the stuff it's going to be fighting. And it basically grabs that stuff with its long tendrils. And it doesn't do anything. It doesn't kill anything. Dendritic cells do not have lysozyme in them. They do not have the ability to kill this stuff. They basically are the main antigen presenting cells. And they basically carry it off and say, okay, B cells, take a picture of this guy, because when he comes back in again, I want you to attack him immediately. Right? I think he's bad. Take a picture. So these guys are located in your skin, your sinuses, your lungs, your stomach, and your intestines. So they're all throughout your body. They're there to protect. Really cool stuff how this works. So let's get into the types of T cells. We've talked a little bit about this when we talked about the immune system in our assessment tools, like how do we assess the immune system. So there's 3 different main types of T cells. There's the helper T cells, the cytotoxic T cells, also called the killer T cells, and the suppressor T cells. So I'm going to give you an overview of each, and then we'll hone in deeper on the T helper cells because they are by far the most complicated of the 3. The cytotoxic T cells, they secrete proteins. Those proteins are called perforins, and they make a hole in the cell membrane. So that it's easier for the other cells, when the lysozyme producing cells can get them, the phagocytic cells. So they basically help, right? They help to kill it. They shoot a hole in it. It identifies it. The suppressor cells, it basically presents the T cells from overdoing it and harming the body. So, okay, attack. We're safe now. We don't want to keep shooting. Because otherwise you can have damage to your own body tissue with innocent bystander type stuff. So those are the killer cells and the suppressor cells. Well, the helper cells, they basically help. They help to stimulate the growth of the killer and the suppressor cells. They help to stimulate the growth of B cells. They activate the macrophages. And they regulate the whole system via a series of lymphokines, which are types of cytokines. We have our type Th1s, which in a very general sense, we can call the immediate hypersensitivity. They actually stimulate responses that will kill something off on spot. And then the Th2s more stimulate a longer term, and they stimulate the antibodies. That is just general. We'll see that there are some overlaps and cross reactions when we look at the various lymphokines. So going to give you an overview. This is the T helper cells simplified, okay? So the T cells are mobilized when there's a cell, like a dendritic cell or a B cell, that has digested an antigen and is displaying that fragment bound to what's called its MHC. We'll talk about what that is. It's basically a histocompatibility marker on the cell. And every cell has them. It's part of a chromosome. And we'll talk about that in more detail in just a bit. So the T cells are basically are mobilized because there's been an invader. And the cytokines will help the T cell to mature. And then when it matures, then there's receptors that activate other cytokines. So basically, you've got this process where there's an antigen, something comes into the body, triggers the T cells to be mobilized, the cytokines are mobilized to help make the T cell mature, and then they come down and differentiate, and then some of the cytokines will actually trigger more T cells. So it's like this cycle. The cytokines help the T cell to mature, but then the T cell helps to produce more cytokines, which then helps to grow and mature more T cells. And basically, when you've got some infected cells, you trigger the release of cytokines that also attract the macrophages, lymphocytes, and other cytokines. So basically, this is the, in a nutshell, what happens. What I want to do, though, is take you a little deeper. And we're don't get freaked out by this chart, but it is kind of a fun chart to give you an idea of how this all works. And again, you'll look at it, and it'll make sense the more you look at it, the more you read, and I've got some recommended reading as well. So if you look at the far left, you have an antigen, right? A foreign invader. The antigen is grabbed by an APC, an antigen-presenting cell. That could be a macrophage, that could be a dendritic cell. And then it's brought to the T helper 0, right? That hasn't differentiated into T helper 1 or T helper 2 or T regs. Okay? The T helper, basic T helper. And then that can differentiate into the Th1s or Th2 based on the kinds of interleukins that are floating around. So if you've got interleukin 12 or TNF-alpha, you've got more Th1 activity. If you've got interleukin 4, you get more Th2. So we get the differentiation, and then the Th1 then produces more TNF-alpha and TNF-beta, and then the Th1s will help stimulate the production of natural killer cells and macrophages, and you get a cell-mediated immune response. Cell-mediated, okay? If you go the other way to Th2, the Th2 produces another set of interleukins, IL-4, IL-13, and it's 5. I have another chart that shows them better. That will help you to produce more eosinophils and have an allergic reaction, or it stimulates the production of more plasma cells and mast cells. So that's more of your allergic reaction in general. However, there are certain, when we look at the Th1, Th2, there are certain autoimmune diseases that are more likely to have a Th1 versus a Th2, and vice versa. And then this is how complex it can get. But just so that you can get a sense of, this is not just the simple, oh yeah, just do this and it stimulates that. It's a very complicated pathway. And if we had 3 months to be together, we could do this. We could go into all the little intricacies and more than I just want you to be exposed to this. But I do want to go into a little bit more detail so you understand. You're probably going to see this particular disease is associated with HLA-B14 or HLA-D3. There is something called the major histocompatibility complex, also known as the human leukocyte antigen. And it's basically a marker that a cell presents, a set of markers that a cell presents. Now, these markers are coded on chromosome 6, and you can see there's a list here, HLA A, HLA-C, B, DR, DQ, and DP. Generally, when you see these HLAs listed, you'll see a DR4, DR17, whatever. DR, DQ, and a number. And that has to do with where on the chromosome that is coded for. And certain of these markers have predisposition to certain diseases. These are basically ways that the body says, hey, this is me, don't attack me, I'm a real cell, I'm not a part of the antigens that are coming in, this is me. And it's when there's a failure in this system that autoimmunity occurs. Okay. So then there's certain gene expressions of the certain numbers that cause the failure to happen more frequently. So these HLAs are basically specialized proteins on every cell surface. They're encoded for by compatibility complex genes on chromosome 6. And this is a picture of chromosome 6, commonly known as HLA. Class 1 and 2, there's three classes. Class 1 and 2 are usually related to autoimmune diseases. They're related to transplant of organs. So when they're trying to see if somebody's a good donor for an organ for someone else, they're looking at all their HLAs. They're looking to see, is there going to be a rejection? Because if you've got a cell that's in your body that presents and it doesn't have what is considered your HLA presentation, it's going to reject it. It's going to attack it. And that's what happens when you've got rejection of organs after transplants. Association with autoimmune disease, and that's usually when there's a failure of the system to adequately. You know, a lot of times it's because of environmental toxins or molecular mimicry or other things that happen that create issues. All cells have type 1 HLAs. There's type 2s are on the antigen presenting cells like macrophages, B lymphocytes, and dendritic cells. And again, used to differentiate self cells from non-self cells. So let's talk about what happens when there's an attack. We've got now an overall understanding, or maybe an overall introduction to, it'll take a little while to have a full understanding of all these pieces and put it all together. And I had to really review this because I haven't been in immunology at this level in a while, but I realized that, yeah, this is, you know, I get the basic pictures. I may not memorize all the names of the different things. And is it important to memorize? No. Is it important to understand and have that in your memory that there's a process and what that process is? Yes, I think it really is, because it's going to help you to serve your patients much better. So how does this work? The invader makes its way in. How does it make its way in? Well, it makes its way in through a failure of one of the barriers. Either a cut in the skin, failure of that barrier, invader makes its way in. Gut, leaky gut, invader makes its way into the bloodstream. Right? You breathe something in, the lungs are maybe compromised a little bit, the invader makes its way into the bloodstream. Or it's happening in that itself. So it may not be a failure, but it may be an activation of the IgA system in the mucous membrane. So it's either a failure of that barrier to keep the antigen from getting into the bloodstream, or it's a reaction that's happening, it's made its way into the body, and now it's happening in that system that's meant to protect. So the macrophages come about, and they engulf the invader, but the way to look at macrophages is they have clubs but no guns. They can stun them, those lysosine enzymes, they can stun them, but they can't kill them. Okay? And then they form an antigen-presenting cell. So the combination of the macrophage with the antigen is called an antigen-presenting cell. It's like, hey, who wants lunch? It presents it to those cells that can actually get rid of it. And then it summons the rest of the system to help out. Puts up some antennas on the antigen-protecting cells, and those are vitamin D receptors. And it searches for vitamin D and the T cells and begins to mobilize. And we'll go through the details of how vitamin D actually works in the immune system so you understand that. So the T helper cells type 1 bring natural killer cells and cytotoxic cells to help the APC. So they bring it. The helpers don't do it, but they bring those killer cells to the site. The natural killer cells and the cytotoxic T cells swarm and destroy the invader. The T regulatory cells come in and make sure there's enough protection via T helper and suppressors so that there's a balance between the T helper and suppressors. And it says, okay, we're done. Let's quit. doesn't always happen that way. And people who have altered immunity don't have the mechanisms in place to calm down the immune system, then that attack can keep going on for a really long time. And we have people, for example, I had a person I was dealing with many, many years ago when I was first in practice. She had psoriatic arthritis. And we did a cleanse, and we got her on a good diet, and she lost a whole bunch of weight, and her psoriatic arthritis calmed down. She didn't have any more joint pains. The rashes went away. She got in a car accident. And it flared up her system in such a way that everything started to come back. So she started stressing about it. She started stress eating about it. So it was like this vicious cycle. But what was happening was her T suppressors were not working. Right. She got in this car accident, and even though we got everything calmed down from the car accident, it wasn't calming her down enough, and she was creating inflammation in her whole body. Happens a lot. You see people, they've had an injury or they had an infection, and the wound is just not healing. It's a long time not healing. It could be a failure of the T suppressors to turn it down. It just keeps being red and raw and inflamed. So then the T helper cells type 2 alert the B cells to make antibodies to memorize the intruder to catch it quicker next time. So we start out with either a virus or a bacteria or a fungus or a yeast or whatever, but it's basically an invader and it presents itself to the body. The macrophage engulfs it. And then it puts up the antenna. See the antenna to say, got a viral antigen, let's go. So then the next step is the macrophage then signals the T cells. Hey, we need help, T helper, we need help. So the T helper activates the cytotoxic cells and also activates the memory cells. So on the side of the memory cells, B cells form plasma cells which then make antibodies which bind to the viral antigen. And then it kills that virus off, but the B cells are the memory cells. And then the 7 antibodies attach to the virus and infect in body cells and signal their destruction. So, boom, done. The cytotoxic T cells destroy it. So you've got a big process that goes on. And it works. It works effectively as long as you've got the nutrition that you need to support these processes. As long as you have enough vitamin D so that the macrophage can actually present that. Vitamin D is real important for the immune system. That's how. There's receptors. This is where it's all happening, where this inflammation that's getting rid of everything happens, right? You've got in the mast cell membrane, which is stimulated by histamines, you've got this arachidonic acid cascade that produces the leukotrienes and the thromboxanes, and those are chemotoxic agents that kill off this presenting agent. And this takes us back to where we started back and when we did very early on in the program, where we talked about inflammation and fatty acids and the importance of fatty acids in the immune system. This process of getting rid of the invaders is happening. And if you don't have enough of the fatty acids and you don't have the nutrients that support it, the fire is going to keep burning. We talked about how drugs get into play. The drugs can actually help to get rid of some of the inflammation, but it's basically paralyzing your own body's innate ability to do that. Steroids and NSAIDs. And in order to actually put out both types of fires, the really strong one and the weaker one, you need steroids or nutrition to the rescue. So nutritional modulation is much more favorable if you can get it working, because it actually gets at the source and it helps to enhance your body's ability to do it itself rather than thwarting that like the drugs do. So these are all the nutrients, and that's where the nutrients that support the immune system come into play. When we go into that, you'll have more of an understanding of how it works. And this, like I said, is a review. So you've got the sun, and it stimulates the UVB receptors to make vitamin D in your skin. It goes into circulation, and that's 25-hydroxy vitamin D3. Goes to the liver and the kidneys, and then it gets activated into 1,25-hydroxy-D. And that's the active form. It's also called calcitriol. Okay? So, again, the same thing. You have it from the sun. You also have vitamin D from the diet. It gets absorbed through the intestines. Same process goes through the liver and gets activated through the kidneys and then activates your bone, your immune cells, and your intestines. So let's look at how this activates the immune cells. So there's vitamin D receptors on your B and T cells. And actually, some of those B and T cells can convert the 25-hydroxy into 1,25-dihydroxy called calcitriol. So it doesn't just happen in the kidney. Some of the B cells and T cells can actually convert that when it needs it. The phagocytes can communicate with the T and the B cells through calcitriol, through the vitamin D, the activated form of the vitamin D. The calcitriol blocks the triggering and arming of T cells that favor autoimmunity. So vitamin D is really, really important for autoimmune conditions. You have to make sure that you test somebody's vitamin D if they have an autoimmune disease and make sure that you optimize it. I have seen people come in with their vitamin D levels in the toilet, like 8, 10, 20. That's one of the first things you have to do when you're dealing with autoimmune diseases and other immune diseases. Adequate level of D keeps the T cells from attacking your own body's tissue. And it also diminishes the role of B cells in producing chemicals that destroy native tissue. So this is really a critical piece for you, for your patients. And let's look at vitamin C. I just put a few quotes from various articles. You can go and look in more detail if you want to know. But vitamin C is really important for your immune system. It actually helps to activate antimicrobial and natural T cell activities, lymphocyte proliferation. Chemotoxic is different from chemotaxis. Chemotaxis is the attracting of those cells, the dendritic cells or the macrophages, to the area where there's a problem. It's also involved in delayed hypersensitivity. It creates a redox, oxidation reduction activity, and the integrity in the cells. It helps that and then protects them against the reactive oxygen generated during the respiratory virus and inflammatory response. This is an exact quote from the Annals of Nutritional Medicine. They looked at the immune-enhancing role of C and zinc on clinical conditions. So C is majorly important, as is D. Some other things that vitamin D modulates: the activity of phagocytes, the production of cytokines, the production of lymphocytes, the number of cell adhesion molecules in monocytes, so their ability to attach to the cells. And this was from Dietary Components of Immune Natural Health. It was a really, really good article if you want to read that. And then zinc. This was again from the same article in the Annals of Nutritional Metabolism, but zinc undernutrition or deficiency shown to impair cellular mediators of innate immunity, such as phagocytosis, natural killer, and oxidative burst. And I couldn't resist this. I found this little thing in the Google Images. Zinc saves kids. Put in initiative in support of UNICEF. Zinc saves kids. Wow! Isn't that cool? People are actually looking at nutrition instead of sending them over antibiotics and other things. Zinc saves kids. Cool, huh? So zinc's role in immunity. NF-kappa beta lures zinc into the immune cells. Once inside, zinc puts the brakes on further activity, so it slows down the autoimmune response and limits the amount of inflammation. So zinc is really important for helping to get it initiated and then calm it down so that we don't have those lingering symptoms. We just get at it, do the thing, and done. So it helps with autoimmunity as well. This is also a very good article on the full explanation of zinc in the immune system. It's a long article, but it's a full PDF, and that's there.